Hello and welcome to The Balanced Life. I'm Kim Kennedy, your host for today. I'm so glad that you're with us. Our guest this morning is Jean Hoff. She's an author and she's written a book called Between Now and Then. And it's a book that answers a question, what do you plan to do with the rest of your life between now and then? Interesting. Jean, welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Jean, can you, before we get into the meat of our topic here, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm a local girl. I was raised in Norristown and went to Norristown schools and became a legal secretary by default. For years, I said I wanted to be Della Street, but one of my lawyer friends recently said to me, I think you really wanted to be Perry Mason. So I worked with lawyers for many years. I also worked at GE, at the space industry in 1961, and commercial construction and healthcare. But it was the law, especially estate administration and estate planning, that really caught me. I'm very passionate about the subject, and the book I wrote is about estate planning mostly. And what do you want to do with your life in five categories between now and then? It's a big question, and you can't answer it in a simple, well, I want to take a cruise, I want to do this. It's a big question, needs a lot of conversations.
Indeed. It's a great lead-in because we're going to talk about a couple different topics today, but let's dig into that a little bit more. What led you to think about writing a book called Between Now and Then?
Well, the title came from a conversation I had with a boss about 30 years ago. It was a very casual conversation, not connected to anything in particular. He wasn't a lawyer. He was president of a healthcare company. He said, you know, Jeannie, I'm not afraid of dying, but I am afraid of what's between now and then. And he said that 30 years ago, long before healthcare got to be the way it is today. And when I needed a title for the book, it just came to me. That's the title for the book. And I like it. People seem to like it and it makes sense. So that's how the book came about. But then when I started working for lawyers, I saw that there was a disconnect between the clients and the lawyers.
How's that? What do you mean by that?
The lawyers, all professionals, speak a language of their own and they would tell the clients what their documents mean, what they will do for them in legalese. It's not a language the average person speaks and it's intimidating. Intimidating and it frightens people. And so I began to write about particular client situations randomly. Just, you know, I just write it and store it in my computer. And I was executor of an estate 6 years ago. And when I was finished, one of my friends said, what are you going to do now? I said, I don't know. And they said, well, don't you have a book languishing in your computer someplace? And the answer was yes. And that's when I put a full court press to finish the book and put all those situations and stories together.
Jean, I've heard you talk about, refer to it as a if I can put it this way, like a racket, the death racket between the lawyers and insurance and how some can take advantage of people at a very difficult time in their lives.
Well, that includes cemetery sales, which I did also, funeral directors, reverse mortgage salespeople, annuity salespeople, anyone who's selling something to someone who doesn't understand what they're buying. A lot of those sales take place in people's homes. They go to these free lunch events, which I have no objection to as long as you know what you're buying. And people don't ask questions because they don't know what questions to ask. That's what my book contains, the questions you need to ask.
That's good. And coupled with the questions you need to ask, there's the tremendous emotional pain that people are going through at a time of loss, and you're not thinking that clearly. So this sounds like the kind of book that you should be reading before all this happens.
Absolutely. Way before. The sooner the better. You can never be too prepared for something that's going to happen randomly, suddenly. I mean, I have a friend who retired from SEPTA, and I used to use this line, you might get hit by a bus. And he said, would you please stop saying that? He said, do you know how much paperwork there is involved when you get hit by a bus? It's just one of those random things. You know, you get up in the morning, you get in a car, you intend to go to work, and something terrible happens.
That's right.
All you have to do is read the newspaper or watch television, and you see it happen. So the question is, does that person have a living will? Have they taken care of guardianships for their children, their elderly parents? Is their money in good shape? Do they have life insurance? There's so many questions.
So this isn't necessarily a book just for the older senior people. This is a book for everyone.
Well, I started out writing it specifically for baby boomers. Actually, that's not true. I started out writing the book and then I began to focus on baby boomers. But then I went back to my original thought because it is for everybody. I mean, if you have children, you should have a will, and especially a living will, and especially some kind of provisions to care for your children in case something happens. Do you have enough life insurance? So many men say, I don't want to pay for life insurance because it's never going to benefit me. Well, what about the people you leave behind? It's an investment. It is not an expense. And same thing with legal fees. A lot of people say, oh, I don't want to pay a lawyer. Why not? You pay your dentist, you pay your plumber, you pay someone to fix your car. Why would you think that you can practice law? And people do it all the time. My book is filled with absolutely true stories. I begin each one by saying, once upon a time, like it is a story, but it isn't. They're all real. And they're all about people who tried to practice law by themselves and it did not turn out the way they hoped for.
Wow. It sounds like, Jean, from your experiences, have you seen people take it on the chin as far as losses go?
Well, when you make a big mistake, a financial or legal mistake, usually they're connected. Seldom is a legal mistake not connected to a financial mistake and vice versa. But many of them can't be fixed. Some of my lawyer friends say that's where we make all our money. Mm. That people have tried to do it by themselves and failed miserably. And then they come to us with a mess, which the operative word here is an expensive mess because lawyers bill by the minute. And why shouldn't they be paid for their expertise? They went to law school. They have a lot invested in their education and their experience. It's a little unfortunate that they don't speak the language of the average person, but that's what I'm trying to put the two together.
Help us interpret legalese to us.
Translate.
Well, that's really good information and advice that can save a lot of heartache down the road. Do you make recommendations if somebody wants to contact you as to who you would suggest they contact for a lawyer or other services?
I would prefer not to.
Okay. All right. That's good. You know, I'm listening to you and I'm wondering, Jean, this sounds like it could be very involved and time consuming. Is it actually?
It takes time. Yes. And it's not linear. You can't just go to your financial planner and take care of all your money and then go to your lawyer and take care of all your legal affairs and then call a funeral director and make your own funeral plans. And then all these things, you can't do them in a linear way. You have to do them in a connected way. Your financial planner needs to work with your lawyer so that the right documents can be prepared. And if you don't have any money for a funeral, how do you expect people to plan for your funeral? All these things are connected one way or another. Of the five chapters of my book, which are legal, financial, funeral and burial, record keeping, and personal, each one to address the question of what to plan to do between now and then. But they are interconnected. And that's why my book is so big, because it's 452 pages. Don't let it frighten you. It's written in plain language. It's that big so that you can see how those five chapters are interconnected. If I had made five separate books and you bought just the legal one, you would not be able to see how it's connected to the personal and the financial. So that's where the time comes in. And it's time well spent. It's absolutely an investment in your peace of mind, your family, well-being, your safety, your security in the future. It's time well spent.
Some people's personal situations are very complex and some are not at all. What are basics that every person needs to prepare and plan for?
I think the most important document is a living will. This is the document where you select the one person you literally trust with your life to speak for you in a medical situation where you cannot speak for yourself. This requires a lot of conversations with the person you appoint to see if they are willing to do that for you. It frightens some people because they think, oh, I don't want to be responsible for decisions like that. The agent that you appoint to speak for you makes no decisions. You have already made them, and it's in writing in your document. But their job is to speak for you and say to your family and the medical profession, this is not what she wants, and dig your heels in and fight for the rights of the person who wrote the document. Now, before you have the document prepared by your lawyer, absolutely do not download this from the internet, even if you can. Have a conversation with the person you intend to appoint. Ask them if they're willing to do it. Can they be strong in a situation where you're probably dying? Can they speak for you against your family's will? In the courts, if necessary. It's not an easy thing, but that's the most important thing, if you ask me, is a living will. Everybody needs one.
All right. That's really, really good advice, because people die at various ages. And I know when I was in my 20s, I would have never thought of such a thing.
There wasn't such a thing then.
No, but it needs to be considered. And it keeps coming back to me, Jean, that during a crisis such as the ones that you're talking about, clear thinking sometimes flies out the window. So better to be prepared and know that you have this information already finished and that you can refer to it.
And have it in writing, in a formal legal document. And the other thing is you have to tell the person you appoint where to find the document. There's no point in sticking it a safe deposit box in a bank. Absolutely.
And nobody
not.
Has the combination to it. So.
No, and if it's in a bank, what if you need it on a Sunday? And what if the person doesn't have access to the bank box? And I don't mean just a key. What if they're not a signer? All these things have to be considered. The person needs access to the original document. Therefore, it's your job to tell them where to find it in a crisis.
Okay. That's really good information. It's not the type of subjects that one likes to necessarily talk about. Doesn't come up for a Sunday afternoon dinner conversation.
It should.
Yes, it should.
It should.
From your experience, what else have you seen that people need to be aware of when dealing with insurance and planning funerals and other things that come to end of life matters?
Common sense is one thing. If someone's trying to encourage you to buy something and your gut tells you, no, I don't think so, try and sort out what it is about you that's saying no. Is it your brain? Is it your heart? Is it your common sense? Is it your instinct? And if the thing they're trying to sell you has value, pursue the conversation with them. Ask as many questions as you can. Investigate it. Don't make a decision now. Say you'll make it later. And investigate it. Make sure that you know what you're doing. Because if you don't, it can bite you. And it can be expensive.
Do you talk about in your book the kinds of questions that people should be asking of, like you said, the annuity salesperson or the cremation, the cemetery, etc.?
The whole book is about what ifs. If you go to arrange a funeral for someone, the funeral director is going to ask for a long list of documentation. So I have it spelled out in the chapter. Have it all ready before you go to meet with them. Maximize the time you spend with these professionals. The same thing with your lawyer. Take a list, a typewritten or handwritten list, names, perfect spellings, addresses, email, phone numbers. I mean, all these things, because it'll save a lot of time. And when it comes to cemetery property and funerals, the funeral director within 10 minutes will ask you, how do you plan to pay for this? And you better have an answer, because they'll take a credit card, but it's not pay over time. If you pre-purchase cemetery property and funeral things, you can pay over time. But at the time of need, at the time of death, there's no time payments. It's cash. That's it. Credit card, if you're willing to put $15,000 on a credit card. But it's something that if you want a funeral, put money someplace where someone in your family knows how to get to it and know that it is specifically designated for your funeral. Other than that, you're going to put your family in debt.
Do you know of alternative measures that people can take? This whole planning can be expensive, and people are in budget crunches these days to a large extent. Are there alternatives that people can take to cut down on the expense of hiring a financial planner? Or I know you're adamant about a lawyer, but some of these other things, can they go online and find things to do themselves?
Financial planners generally don't charge fees the way lawyers do. They generally operate on a fee and commission combination. You don't get billed by the hour by a financial planner. It's not a percentage of what you invest generally, but it is a question you want to ask of a financial planner. How do you charge? It's a reasonable question. You're entitled to an answer. With a lawyer, I see legal fees as an investment, because if you make a mistake, it's expensive. And as far as pre-planning for a funeral, I recommend doing your own research. Spend a nice Sunday afternoon driving around, looking at cemeteries. If you want to be buried, find a pretty cemetery. Check out the cost of the plots or the mausoleums or the tombstones. I mean, do this yourself. Have a list, prepare it, give it to your family. That's where you can help. So that when there's a death in the family, people tend to overspend out of guilt. And that overspending can be a real problem, because once the funeral is over, someone is left with debt. And that's not what you want to remember the person who just died. You want to remember them by all the good things and not how they left you in debt.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I saw that happen in my family. And yeah, a lot of decisions were made on the spur of the moment. And later it was like, oh boy, wow, funerals are expensive.
Yep.
How would you summarize your book? Why would someone want to buy this? How can it be a help to them?
If you're a person who cares about your future, and if you're a planner, I mean, do you write a list before you go to the grocery store? Do you have your documents at home filed someplace? Organized? Are you an organized person? Or are you just kind of throw it up in the air and where it lands, it lands? If you don't keep records in good shape, after you die, your family is going to have to pay by the hour to sort it all out. So you keep your records in good shape. I don't mean some fancy system, just A to Z so that somebody can find it. Keep your contact list available to someone in your family. Your passwords on your computers. Make sure that people have access to that, because that is a real problem after you're gone, for someone to come behind you and figure it all out.
So just little things, but they can make the process so much less of a headache. If you think ahead, you find someone you trust, I think that's key. Someone you know you can count on and be that confidant who will carry out your wishes if you're incapacitated or if you're gone at a certain point, and can make the process maybe not less painful, but not as excruciating and time consuming.
Smoother, definitely smoother. People have said that being an executor is like being on a scavenger hunt. Well, yes and no. A scavenger hunt, they give you a list and they say, find this, 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 and this. The executor has no such list. He just finds things and then he has to deal with it. Whatever shows up as far as your assets is up to the executor to handle. Sometimes it can be a very messy situation. And the worse, the bigger the mess, the bigger the legal fee.
Well, Jean, if someone is interested in reading this book and finding out more about it for themselves, where can they go to purchase it?
The book can be purchased at my website, which is www.jeancoffauthor.com. Jean is spelled J-E-A-N-N-E. Hoff is H-O-F-F. JeanCHoffAuthor.com or on Amazon.
Okay. So folks, if you're looking for a Christmas present for someone who has everything, and that speaks about a great many Americans these days, this would be a great gift, I think, for someone. I mean, it really is a help to someone. It's something that wouldn't get regifted. It's something someone would read and use this information. It would make a very excellent gift. So talking about Christmas, Jean, we've been having a conversation a little bit before we came on air talking about a balanced Christmas. And you made some very excellent points about what that looks like. And in particular, you're a person who is very interested in financial planning. Balance is very important to you. I can tell that. And you get really upset about people who go into debt in order to celebrate the birth of Christ. And that's not right. And I agree with you that it brings joy for a fleeting joy. And then in January, it brings just the opposite sticker shock. So what do you suggest to people in planning for Christmas in order to have a great Christmas and a balanced Christmas?
Think about the people on your Christmas list and what they like to do. And the gift that you buy or give to them, try to make it appropriate for who they are as a person and the things they like to do. Just don't walk into a big store and buy something just because you think you have to give them something. So many people do that. And that credit card bill is going to come in January and for 11 months after that with high interest rates. And then next year, Christmas will come and you'll start all over again. Does that make any sense? If you have only a limited amount of money to spend, tell your family that you only have a limited amount of money and you do not want to do big gift exchanges this year. It's no shame to say that to your family. The idea behind Christmas gift giving has been around since the birth of Christ, and all you have to do is think of gold, frankincense, and myrrh to know that. But I don't think that the items that are in these big box stores that are packaged in plastic and cardboard visually, I mean, unbelievable. I saw some open the other day at a child's birthday party. I'm thinking, really? It's expensive, and it's going to end up in your summer yard sale. I don't see the point of that. I really don't. So stop and think, are you shopping to make yourself happy, or are you shopping in relation to the person you're going to give the gift to? If you're shopping to make yourself happy, ask yourself, are you addicted to shopping? What part of you is in the gift? Is it just something, oh, please, I have to give them a gift? If it's a big sale, is it really a sale if you're paying interest over 12 or 13 months? In my family, I give to my sister's children a well-chosen book from a used book sale in which there is money. That's it. That's what they get from my husband and me for years and years and years. That's what they know. That's what they expect. And it's become a source of fun and expectation.
Sounds like a very thoughtful gift, Jean.
Well, I think they enjoy it. I pick the books carefully. And I know that rather than buy them an item of clothing which they don't want or another toy which they don't need, the book will be there for when they feel like reading it. And the money, they can always buy something.
Yes.
And the best thing they could do is put it in a Roth IRA.
These are really great suggestions and ideas. And you know, Jean, there's a lot of creativity in gift giving that doesn't necessarily involve cash money. I've seen people who will give out IOUs for free babysitting. A batch of cookies always goes a long way. Offering a senior a month's worth of lawn work and raking. Those are just a few ideas of gift giving that really mean something and are a personal sacrifice to a person.
Well, I think that's where the meaning comes in. It's a personal gift to someone who has a need, a genuine need that you know of, that you can fulfill without any sacrifice to you, that you can spend time with an older person playing a board game, taking them to the hairdressers, taking them out to lunch. I mean, do something to share of yourself rather than just hand them something.
I agree.
And if you paint or if you sew, I mean, any particular talent that you have, if you have something you could give to someone as a gift, I think that means a whole lot more than something out of a big box store. I just am not crazy about big box stores.
Well, I hear what you're saying. I agree with you. And what I hear you're saying is to those who are not in a financial position, you know, their heart is that they want to get big gifts and lots of gifts. But if you're not in a position to do it, don't do it. Think outside the box. haha, and look for creative ways to give people really neat gifts that they'll appreciate and that will be worthwhile, but that are a little bit different. And you'll have a great Christmas. You'll bless someone and not be in debt. Jean, I think that is the key to what you're saying here.
It is.
Don't go in debt.
It is. There are enough ways in this world that you can get into debt. People in this country today are in terrible debt. And to add more debt on top of what you already have just doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. But you have control over that. It isn't like someone forces you to buy something. You can say yes or no. And that freedom of choice is very important to me.
I agree. Well, Jean, this has been a great conversation today. I've learned a lot. I have a feeling that you're going to have to come back and talk a little bit more about your book between now and then. There's a lot to talk about planning, and maybe talk specifically more on each chapter and delve into that in more depth. But once again, can you tell our listeners where they can purchase the book between now and then?
The book is available on my website at www.jeancoffauthor.com or on Amazon. And you can find it. Just look up between now and then.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for being our guest. And we wish you a merry and balanced Christmas.
Thank you for the opportunity. And I wish you the same.
Be the center. Be my hope. Be my song. Jesus.
Hi, this is Jean Hoff, author of Between Now and Then, a common sense end-of-life planning guide for baby boomers and the rest of us. You can purchase this book on my website, www.jeancoffauthor.com, or on Amazon. Jean is spelled J-E-A-N-N-E, a practical gift for people you care about.
Working for you. Shining light from Philly to the nations. 1180 shining forth, we are the Freedom Station. WFYN.
Are you tired of spending hours entering your customers' orders? Do you want to be more productive on a daily basis? Do you want to grow your profits in 2016? Then let Digital Namers help increase your business by engaging the community and creating custom software to increase your productivity. Visit us online at digitalnamers.com to learn more. That's digitalnamers.com, digitalnamers.com.
Welcome back to The Balanced Life. I'm Kim Kennedy here with you today. We're very glad that you can join us, and we are continuing on with Melissa Cafaro, owner of Digital Namers. And Melissa is a very talented person, a great marketer, and we're so glad that she's here with us. She's going to talk a little bit about Digital Namers and one of her customers. But Digital Namers stands for New Age Marketing and Evolved Routine Software. They focus on giving your company a digital presence using web development, social media marketing, and custom software. I know Melissa personally, and she really does strive to help her clients interact with her customers, form good relationships, manage the valuable ones they have. She's here for marketing specialist. That's her official title. Correct, Melissa?
That is correct.
I like that. And Melissa, we want to jump into it and talk about how marketing has changed. It's changed quite a bit. And you're telling me there's a threefold process to help businesses grow. What's your first one?
Well, actually, we focus on, like you mentioned, New Age marketing, and we have a threefold process. What we do is first we look at the company's website or web presence and say, is it accurate throughout all the other search engines? Can anything be changed? Can anything be increased? How is their website? Is there a contact form? Is there all the pertinent information available for them? And if it's not, we will help them create a better web presence. We'll increase their SEO, which is search engine optimization, to make sure that they are the highest results on Google, Bing, Yahoo. We'll also make sure that they have their contact form and all of their information that they need in their header or their slider, whatever else they might prefer to have on their website. That's our first process. The second process is finding out what the actual goals of the company is. Most companies say, well, we want to make more money. So we say,
don't we all?
Exactly. So most of our customers like to become more engaged with their community. They're small local businesses that really just want to gain awareness. So that's what we specialize in, engaging the community. We specialize in events, creating specials, interacting with local charities to create fundraisers, having maybe an art show or some kind of event that's in a shop if it's a retail location to have them open their doors to new customers potentially. And that's how we'll engage the community. And then our third process is to create them custom software. Basically, we want to increase their productivity, make sure that their daily tasks are done efficiently and quickly as possible, because no one wants to be sitting there logging in, creating orders when they could be gaining new customers to create new orders. So we'll create a customer portal, login, or an order entry system, inventory management, anything that will help the business become more productive.
So you free up the business owner's time to generate income, and you sound like you're the kind of person who brings the customers to them.
That is correct. We bring customers to you, then we make sure that you can interact with them, sell your product. And once you do that, all the back end with the customer, with the inventory management or custom software will be generated through us and make your life a lot easier.
That sounds ideal. Melissa, in this day and age, digital is king. When I first broke into the business, as I say, it wasn't.
Right. It used to be print. And
it's exactly. It was the old fashioned way. And Melissa has taught me a lot. I've learned a lot from her, folks. So I can personally recommend her company. But what does a well-built website look like to you?
Well, a well-built website will have all the important information at the top. Most people want to know what your mission statement or about you. A lot of people are actually interested in your team members. If you have a team or if you're a single person, you should put a background or a biography on there, because believe it or not, that's one of the most clicked pages. Every company should have some sort of face and personality. That's a branding tactic. Also, contact information should be big and bold and easy to access, possibly even on every page. Your location, phone number, ways to contact you, some type of call to action. And then you start to get into your products, your services, and how you offer them. And then that'll be all the most important information on your website. And then you can go into anything else you might like, specials, events, news, accreditations, anything like that.
You find that works for your customers, that gets people to the page and keeps them on there?
Absolutely.
Okay. You talk about event management. What's that all about?
Well, I personally am the event specialist within the company. I don't create the software or the portals, but I do the community engagement. And basically, whatever you might need for an event, I can help you with, whether it's small or large, anything from organizing meetings with big corporations all over the world. We can schedule a car or a limo to pick them up at the airport. We can also have little local events like an art show. You want to have some local artists involved, have them come out to your show or come out to your shop and then show their artwork for sale potentially. We also, like I said, do fundraisers. Anything that you could think of, we can plan. Caterers, food, a bouncy house, anything.
So it doesn't sound like a template that you apply to your customers. It sounds like you assess their needs and say, well, based on what you've shared with me, I would recommend this plan of action and et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely. Everything we do is custom. Every marketing plan we write is custom for our clients. Every piece of software is custom. Any logins is custom. So even sometimes customers or clients will say, I only want to do just a marketing plan and then I will use it on my own time. Okay, we can do that for you. We can just write you a custom marketing plan for your business with your strategies and help you get on your way to managing your marketing in-house if you would choose to do that.
Besides that, Melissa, does Digital Namers offer any other services?
Yeah, absolutely. We offer affordable custom software, which could include client management and notification systems, any type of scheduling, appointment setting systems, an order management system, financial gateways such as e-commerce sites. So if you have products you'd like to sell, any GSI or mapping. So say you have a music venue or a band that you want to have all their locations placed on a map for people to click on. That would be something we create that's custom. And we also offer managed hosting hosting. So if you're tired of working with a hosting system for your website that is constantly going down or yours is really slow, you can talk to us about our hosting packages. Our servers are fully monitored. We have a daily backup in action. We also have security updates, software updates, and dependency updates. So it's state of the art. It's in a state of the art data center in Newark, and our custom server setup is available for you at any time.
Wow. Okay, so sounds like one-stop shopping to me is definitely what I hear.
Absolutely.
And you don't really, there's not much of a need to go anywhere else but work with you guys. This all sounds very involved. Is a lot of time involved with this, working with your customers? Or?
Well, absolutely. We are very personable, and we like to work on a person-to-person basis with each of our customers. So we'll make sure to keep our workload within our time management that we have available. That way, all of our clients feel that they have enough time with us. We don't like to not be able to answer the phone. We don't like to be too busy to have anything to do with them. So we make sure that everything is organized and well thought out before we plan.
Well, Melissa, I know you well enough to know that you don't leave anything up to guesswork, and you're always extremely well prepared. I'd like to translate this into, it's one thing for people to come in and say, well, we do this and we do that, and it's all fine and good, and they do. But I'd like to talk about one of your clients today and what you actually are doing.
Oh, great.
So, nice segue, huh?
Nicely done.
Melissa represents North Penn Art, and that is a wonderful art store. What's
It's technically a custom framing shop.
Custom framing
located
shop.
In Lansdale.
He does wonderful work, folks. Where is he located on Broad Street?
720 South Broad Street. So it's at the intersection around Broad and Allentown in Lansdale, if you're familiar with that. It's really, really great.
It is. It's worth going to, folks.
And he's been in, Paul Kranak is the owner, and he's been in business for over 35 years. He actually took the business over from his father, Joe Kranak, and it was originally an art supply store. But now it's been completely transformed into custom framing, restoration, enlargements, giclée prints. We make greeting cards now. So they really have a lot of products and services to offer to all of their customers.
What I like about them, Melissa, when I was in there, is how he helps people take parts of their life that are worth immortalizing, if I put it that way, and preserve it in a really neat, artistic way.
Absolutely. They really specialize in framing and preserving the treasures of each and every person's life.
Yes, yes.
Heirlooms, family mementos, sports memorabilia. Those are all really popular items that we see come through the shop on a daily basis.
You know, we've been talking about a balanced Christmas. That's one of our themes this month. And we've been talking about not going crazy on spending. But I also think involved in a balanced Christmas is buying gifts of meaning, buying
Absolutely.
Gifts of good taste, buying things that really mean something to someone. And when you told me about that, and I saw that, I thought, you know, if you know someone out there who has, I don't know, maybe their great grandmother's wedding picture or something, or a family heirloom, like, how do we preserve this? You know, let's
right.
get this out of some dusty old box. You could frame it, correct?
Absolutely. We always encourage customers to look under their bed and see what's been sitting there in the back of their closet, because, I mean, you could find your great-great-grandmother's chocolate chip cookie recipe, and we can frame that with their wooden spoon that they grew up with, running
That's
around
neat.
The house with.
And maybe some kids wouldn't want to memorize.
I think most of them would. So we can frame and preserve that, put it behind museum glass, make sure that Ooh. It won't fade, won't get dusty. And you can keep it in the kitchen. Not only can you use it for the recipe, but you can also keep it close by to always remember.
That's really neat. And that is something that ends up being passed down along with other treasures in a family. Okay, I want to ask you, and help me if I'm not pronouncing this correctly.
Oh, no problem.
What is a giclée?
Giclée. It is a French word. And a giclée is a fine art replication. So basically, an artist will have their original artwork that they painted with oil, watercolor, charcoal, pen and ink, and either someone they know likes it a lot, or their family members want a copy of it, but they don't want to give away the original, or they still want to have that on file. So we will scan it and color correct it to make sure that it's exactly a replication of the original. And then we can give you a digital file of your original piece of artwork. We can enlarge it and print it and even stretch it onto a canvas. canvas. We could custom frame it. We could just mat it and put it in a sleeve for resale if you're an artist that's looking to sell their artwork for profit.
Sounds like we could depend on Paul to make his suggestions based on his years of experience.
Absolutely. All the employees at North Penn Art are extremely talented and educated and will be able to pick out the perfect frame or mat or size for anything you might be coming in with.
You know, Melissa, when I hear you talk, when you hear custom, a lot of times that word throws you off. But it's like, well, that's not for my budget. What would you say to that?
You know what? Actually, it's not about the price. It's about what you're bringing in to preserve and transform into a hand-me-down or even perhaps a jersey that your husband or brother or friend won the game in or has signed by one of their famous athletes. We can frame that and put it on the wall for the man cave. And it's about having something that is going to be in your life for a long time. So it's more of an investment than actually just a cost or an expense.
The value is priceless.
Exactly. It's mostly affordable for many people too.
Yeah, you know, it's funny too, when you calculate how much you spend up on a bunch of little gifts, you could get one really good, meaningful gift that somebody would really cherish. So,
and you can enlarge and stretch your canvas for under $100 easily. So it's very affordable for a gift or even for yourself if you're looking to update your mantle.
Well, let's switch gears a little bit, Melissa, because I know of your work with local artists and Paul's very community oriented. And recently we worked with you on the Veterans Art Show and the artist, John Bolden.
Oh, yes.
Had some marvelous, marvelous pieces.
He did.
And he was displaying them there recently and you were able to raise money for the Wounded Warrior Project.
Correct.
Correct. Tell us about some of the other things that Paul does to work with local artists.
Absolutely. And this is actually one of the tasks that Paul brought Digital Namers on for, was to engage the community. He said, I really just want the community to know that I exist and that I've been here and that I'm a friend to other community-based organizations such as Man on Main Street located in Lansdale. And one of the main promotions or campaigns we're running right now for them is the craziest pet picture. So if you really love a picture of your pet, be sure to submit a picture to northpenart@gmail.com and we'll post it on Facebook. And for every like that each picture receives, North Penn Art will be donating $1 to Man on Main Street. And then in the terms of local artists, we have a local artist page on our website that is dedicated just to local artists. So if you're looking for the perfect gift, we have everything from watercolor to oil to abstract to portraits from local artists. And they will be giclées, or you could buy the originals and you can have it scanned and enlarged any size you want. So if you have something you're looking for, this is a great opportunity to check out our local artist page on northpennart.com.
And once again, another unique gift that is not cookie cutter. It's one of a kind.
Absolutely.
So what are you doing more with North Penn, with the community at large, to interact and grow awareness?
Well, actually, we are, like I said, we're really pushing the Facebook campaign for the craziest pet picture because we love to raise money for charities and organizations. We also will be having a painting party on December 10th. It's going to be a snowman with a barn and a watermill in the background. So we can paint that and get together and kind of learn to paint.
Sounds
like
the
community. We just finished up a couple local art shows. Like you said, John Bolden's Veteran Art Show we finished up. We had Orlin Art Center come out and have an art show with their local artists. And we had the North Penn Arts Alliance come out with their art show. So we had about 100 artists in our building over the last month just kind of showing their artwork to the public and winning awards and selling their artwork. So that's kind of how we get involved in the community.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot of creativity going on there. It sounds like a lot of fun. It sounds like there's something there for many members of the community. I'm guessing there are folks there who didn't know that North Penn Art had their hands in so many things and had so many cool things to offer.
Absolutely.
I guess, Melissa, I see here that they can go to northpennart.com if they want to check out more.
Absolutely. There's an event section if you're interested in coming out to the shop and maybe participating in one of our upcoming events. There's also the local artist page if you'd like to look at some local artwork. Maybe you're interested in redoing some of the walls in your home or buying a gift for someone. Then there's also, of course, our About Us. Read about our team.
Also, folks, after Christmas, Valentine's Day is coming up, so maybe some artwork for someone you care very deeply for. I'm sure Melissa will be back to tell us about that.
Oh, absolutely. We know how to make a grown man cry with the perfect gift, I promise.
That would be interesting. But Melissa, we're just about out of time. So first of all, if somebody wants to find out more about Digital Namers, how do they get in touch with you?
Go to our website, digitalnamers.com, and we have a contact form. And also our phone number is on there. We'd be more than happy to talk to you about your marketing needs. And if you want to visit North Penn Art, northpennart.com. They also have a contact form or a phone number or stop in the shop on Broad Street.
Excellent. Definitely both are worth checking out. Melissa, thank you so much for being our guest today. We really appreciate
it. Thank you.
Folks, we wish you a merry and balanced Christmas. Thank you for being with us today on The Balanced Life.
Jesus, be my vision, be my path, be my guide, Jesus.
Want to make a grown man cry this holiday season? Come to North Penn Art Custom Framing in Lansdale. We are the specialists that are devoted to framing the treasures of your life. We can frame sports memorabilia, jerseys, awards, and newspaper articles. Let us display that game-winning home run for that special someone's man cave. We can also restore and enlarge antique photos and preserve those family heirlooms behind premium museum glass. Stop in today to see our showroom at 720 South Broad Street, Lansdale, Pennsylvania, or visit us on the web at northpennart.com. That's northpennart.com.
Trinity Associates Incorporated has been in the electrical power testing business for over 35 years. We've specialized in working for some of the biggest firms in Philadelphia, and indeed America. Not only do big firms appreciate our expertise because of their size, but they can compare us to our competitors. They appreciate our reasonable prices. In fact, many of the largest firms call us year after year for sometimes 35 years in a row. We can provide the same service for smaller firms, bringing the same expertise and reasonable prices. Call Trinity Associates Incorporated for your electrical power testing needs and a free quote. Not all electrical power testing firms are the same. Call Trinity Associates Incorporated at 610-876-6428. That's 610-876-6428. Visit their website at trinityassos.com. That's trinityassos.com.
This is such a privilege to be able to come to you today. I'm Nancy Houston Hansen, CEO of Capstone Legacy Foundation. And Capstone Legacy Foundation was created to benefit donors and is what we call donor advised. That usually means the giver has an opportunity to explain what it is that they feel is on their heart to give, and we're there to see how we can help. I have with me today Tom Kaiser, who's our CFO at Capstone Legacy Foundation, and we'll be talking about the benefits of a donor-advised fund or giver-advised fund and the benefits thereof. And we'll be talking together about some of the things that may be questions that people have asked to see if we can be more explicit in some of the things that might pertain to you who are listening. I'd like to start off with the Bible verse that God has put on our hearts. It's in 1 Corinthians 4:1-2. Let a man so consider us as servants of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. Moreover, it is required in stewards that one be found faithful. And the reason that we're called stewards is because it isn't money we own. It's money that God has placed in the hands of his children, and we are here in a way to help serve those of you who would like to see a fund set up on behalf of what they'd like to do, what you'd like to do, and who you'd like to give to, and how we can help you do that in a way that is professional, biblical, that is in a way that honors what you want to do and the Lord under whom you do it. So we're here to discuss what is a donor advised fund and why would you use one and how would you use one. And if at any time you have questions that come to your mind and your place where you can jot them down or speak them into your phone, please feel free to submit any questions to capstonelegacyfoundation.org, and we will be sure to respond in our future radio programs. So thank you, Tom, for joining me today.
You're welcome.
And we wanted to get into what is a donor-advised fund?
Well, that's a fairly recent development in philanthropy, and it's usually handled through what is known as a community foundation, which is what Capstone is, as opposed to a private foundation. And community foundations have grown dramatically in the last 10 years, the number of them throughout the country. And it allows many donors to come together, get their tax deductions by making a donation to the community foundation, in this case Capstone, and then we manage the money for them, and they advise us on how they want that money to be donated.
Yeah, that brings up the point that once money has been given to a 501c3, legally speaking, it belongs to that entity. Now, our goal is to support Christians and those who would give with a biblical perspective into the community, the things that are going to benefit and extend the community having a culture that most relates to the Christian perspective. And so one of the things that we feel is so important is for people to realize that according to the IRS, it's called advised. That means if people put their funds into something that doesn't exactly agree with their values and with their biblical purview, that can be a problem, can't it, Tom?
That's correct. And we would, of course, endeavor to work with our donors to make sure they understood that about Capstone, to make sure that our goals and theirs are consistent and the same. Perhaps I could take a moment to describe some of the specific benefits to a donor-advised fund, if that
Good
would
idea.
Be okay. A person would get an immediate tax deduction. The example that I've heard is many times at the end of the year, someone will get a bonus, and they want to give some of that away, but it's very close to the end of the year. They'd love to get the tax deduction for it, but with the holidays, it's just not feasible for them to decide how to donate that money. They can give it to Capstone, and they get their deduction immediately. So if someone gets, say, a $20,000 bonus and they want to give, say, $5,000 of that away, they could write a check to Capstone, get the tax deduction. The $5,000 goes into their donor-advised fund, and then they can make up their minds later the following year where to give it.
Right. And it really has an ability for people to think and pray about it. And one of the things that we just want to affirm is that our goal is to help you with your intent in giving to the best we can. And at Capstone, we vet things out to make sure that they are what the donor thinks they are and that they're going to get the benefit for which they're giving their funds.
Another thing that a donor can do through a donor-advised fund is have their own family foundation, if you will. Mm-hmm. Many people think it's a good thing to set up a private foundation, and some will do that after the sale of, say, a business or some other asset that they might hold. And but there's a lot of cost and effort involved in setting up a private foundation. And at Capstone, all that can be alleviated by using the donor-advised fund tool that we have.
Yeah, you're right. It's expensive to start one up, and it also takes time, and there's a lot of legal work that goes into it, where with us it can be done in about as little as a week, right, Tom?
Actually, a matter of hours.
So, I mean, it takes out the complexities, the compliances. It takes out all of the angst that's in there, and it just gives the joy in giving, because we also have something called a donor view. You want to explain that a little bit?
Well, like most financial institutions, much of the work is done on the internet now. So we have a web-based program where a person can track the activity in their donor-advised fund. And, of course, they get the login credentials like you would with any similar fund. And they can also make recommendations online, too, as to who to donate money to. And we also have a method where donations can be made through our website and designated for their donor-advised fund.
Yeah, and I think the other thing I was thinking about is there's sometimes at the end of the year people want to give some of their highly appreciated assets, which can be sold. But what happens is so many people consider that they ought to sell them first and then give a portion to charity. But what they don't realize is they're going to have to pay taxes on the wholesale, and so they don't have as much given. If they want to give more, they can give it directly to Capstone. Capstone that can then put it into a fund, and they only lose whatever would be the what we need to do to convert it into cash. So that's one thing that can be done too.
Right. The tax implications of giving the asset away rather than selling it first are much more advantageous to the donor if they were to give, say, an art piece of artwork or real estate. And it's just like appreciated securities. They get a tax deduction for the fair market value of the gift. And it turns out that they end up cash-wise much more efficient in their gifting if they do it that way.
You know, another thing, too, about being a part of a public foundation, it's anonymous. If you give, if you have a private foundation, it's online. They can find it. They can find out how much you have in there, who you give to, how much you're paid. And so, as they say, a private foundation is not private, where a public foundation really has most of that in their back office in-house, and it is really not
yes,
as visible.
And that's another reason for using a donor-advised fund. Anonymity. If you want your gift to go anonymous to the charity, the donor-advised fund is the most efficient and cheapest way to do that. Some people will give money through their attorney in that manner, but you know, then you get a bill, a $500 bill from your attorney. I'm not trying to put attorneys down, but it'd be much less expensive to do it through us because the check comes from Capstone, and we would tell them that the gift was made by an anonymous donor through us.
Yeah, I think one thing I really wanted to inform those of you who are thinking about this is the fact, too, there are a lot of years that people have given to what we call more the secular community types of giving, and we are finding that there are is a growing sense of people who apply to public foundations that even have Christian funds in there to get money out. And what the Christians don't know is that they're being given papers saying that they have to get the money, they have to be willing to hire people who have sexual, what would you say, sexual things that are opposed to us biblically, whether it's homosexuality, transgendered, or whatever, because it's culturally relevant now. And we hold the Christian values, the Christian mores, the biblical perspective. So to wind us up today for our 10-minute presentation, is there something that you'd like to just add, Tom, as we close?
Well, we stand ready to explain more. What can be done? It's difficult in 10 minutes to discuss all the plethora of ways that donations can be made that can benefit the donor in the long term as well as the charity.
So if you have any questions and anything that you would like to talk to us about, please feel free to call us at 610-688-8890 or you can get our email, capstonelegacy.org, Tom Keyser, K-E-Y-S-E-R, or Nancy Hansen, or any in the office. We would be delighted to answer your questions. Until next time, God bless your living legacy.
In Psalm 39:7, King David said, "My hope is in the Lord." David's hope wasn't some idle wish. It was a solid confidence that kept him going in the worst of times. Where's your hope? Hello, I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network. Having a fixed and certain hope in the Lord is beyond value and measure in our walk with God. It's said that if you take away a man's wealth, you'll hinder him. If you take away a man's purpose, you'll slow him. But if you take away a man's hope, you'll stop him. That's why our personal walk with God must be more than theory. It must be more than a once-a-week prayer or an occasional Bible reading. Our walk with God must revolve around the person of Jesus Christ in a daily walk led of the Spirit of God, not of our ambitions, our goals, or our finances. I'm Sam Rohr of the American Pastors Network. Can you say with the psalmist, "I will be unmoved because my hope is in the Lord"?
Join the Pennsylvania Pastors Network at papastors.net.
You're listening to WFYL 1180, working for your liberty and things that matter. Thanks for listening.